Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. So no big surprise, I talk a lot. And now I can share some of the incredible people that cross my path and the interesting conversations that we have. The Private Practice Secrets podcast is all about sharing our business experiences and harnessing our collective wisdom. My guests are amazing. They're bold, brave, and they're honest. There are many laughs, and surprisingly, there's frequent talk of wine. We're sure you're really going to enjoy these unplugged private practice chats. So settle in. Let's get the conversation started. Welcome aboard, Sue Martin, boss lady, founding CEO of 101 Children's Therapy in Sydney. How are you?
I'm freezing cold, Kathy. It's a miserable day here in Sydney.
Oh, it's just so lovely to have you. Melbourne's turned it on. We've had bright blue sky, and although it's cool, it's just perfect. But you've got a week of rain, so settle in.
I know. We have rain until Thursday. Joy.
Unbelievable. Alrighty, well, let's talk about the good stuff. I am really curious to find out where your private practice adventure began. Can you remember that far back?
That's a very, very long time ago, Kathy.
Well, wind yourself back.
Oh, dear. It actually started, let me just think, it would be 27 years ago.
Wow.
So 27 years ago, I was 6 months pregnant with my first child.
Quite a few businesses have started during maternity leave.
I think, yes, I'm not at all surprised. So I had, my husband and I were expecting. I resigned from what was then an adult job in a Sydney teaching hospital. We went overseas for probably 6 to 7 months. I can't remember exactly. And when I came back, I thought I wouldn't work for a couple of years. And I thought, I'll be a mum. And that lasted all of about a week.
I shouldn't laugh. Yeah.
You shouldn't laugh. No. And I thought, I'm looking forward to being a mum. But no, I decided that I would start a private practice when I was 6 months pregnant with my first child. And back, it was different back in those days. In those days, you sent a letter. You typed a letter and you sent it to people. You rang people. You cold called. You sent thousands of letters to private health companies because I don't know that we had a Medicare provider number then. I can't remember because I remember sending letters to every individual private health company.
That might have been to get your provider number from them because they all wanted to have their own.
Exactly.
And gradually over time they've decided to just be happy with the Medicare one.
Yeah.
Were you working from home with sort of one hand on the cradle and the other on the
Well, when I was it started mobile. So at the time I was the first mobile speech pathologist in Sydney's eastern suburbs.
Ooh. Wow.
No. It wasn't from home. It was mobile.
And who were you working with and what were you doing?
I went from adults, went straight into pediatrics. So I went into private practice and did the big leap from adult to pediatrics. I'm trying to remember. It was a long time ago. I was working, you know, very much with just speech and language delay. At that point in time, autism really wasn't on the horizon the way it is now.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, speech and language delay, I was starting to do a lot of work in preschools at that particular time because it was mobile, and that was unusual. So that was very unusual to be in a preschool offering speech pathology services. Home visits, yeah.
Did it grow quite quickly?
It grew really, really quickly, and before my son was born, I couldn't cope with the caseload.
Gosh.
So within that 2 month period of time, and I certainly wasn't working full time, whatever I had allowed myself, which may have been 15 hours. I had that within a month.
Wow.
And then it grew. There weren't many private therapists. Back in those days, private practitioners were viewed with suspicion.
I was just about to ask you about this because I've been having conversations with a couple of other pioneers. We've, well, sort of enjoyed reminiscing about how hard it was to actually, what's the word, not stick up for yourself, but just explain what you do and why you do it and why you're not employed somewhere in the government.
The view at the time was that if you were in private practice, it was because you were not good enough to get a job in the public sector or you were too greedy and you wanted the money.
The greed bit and the money, that's right.
Whereas these days it's hard to get a job in the private sector, the public sector.
Particularly if you're a mature and experienced clinician, there's very, very little choice. That ceiling as well and truly.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it was fun. It was a little bit lonely. It was very lonely.
Yeah.
there weren't a lot of private practitioners. You didn't have the support networks that are available now to private practitioners, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I remember the fun bit and I remember the lonely bit as well. So what did it look like sort of 2 and 3 years down the track?
2 and 3 years down the track, I was pregnant again. And by then I was actually working from home. So the garage had been converted into a private practice. And I think at that point in time, possibly a year after my second child was born, that was when I had my first employee.
Okay. And then fast track the next decade or so, when did you move out into rooms and what were your decisions around that?
I moved into rooms when my third child only had
business and baby time frames.
Only had three children, so there we go. I moved into rooms when she. Oh no, that's not quite right. We moved. So we moved, and we had a self-contained area in the house that we moved into. And then I actually had two employees. I moved into rooms when she was probably three. That's when I felt that I needed that separation.
Yeah.
I didn't want to hear the children having an argument about who was watching TV while I was trying to do therapy downstairs.
Or wondering where the Fisher-Price tape recorder toy is because you needed it and there was a good chance it was under the dining table.
Was I the only one
that had those moments?
No, I think in those days it was actually the Fisher-Price cash register.
Yes. Gold. Therapy gold. Now, your rooms are most unusual. They're probably the highest altitude therapy rooms that I know of. Paint a picture for the listeners about your rooms and where they are.
We are in Sydney's eastern suburbs in Bondi Junction. We are in an office tower above Westfield Bondi Junction. So we're on level 25 and we look down upon the whole of the south of Sydney. We have a fabulous view.
Gorgeous.
It's a beautiful view. So we look down all over southern Sydney. We can see the ocean, the airport, Botany Bay. The best thing to see is actually when a thunderstorm comes rolling in.
Oh, I could imagine.
It's a beautiful view, but I have to say that after a period of time, you don't look out it as much.
Yeah.
Except when you're having one of those moments in a session and you think, oh, how can I fix this session? And you look out the window.
Yep, to shift your visual gaze and re-engage other parts of your thinking. How many rooms? What do they look like? Who's working in there?
We have 5 therapy rooms. We have 2 large therapy rooms and we have 3 smaller therapy rooms. So in the practice, and I think this is probably where we're relatively unique, we have 5 full-time speech pathologists, of which we are all certified ESDM therapists.
We'll get to that bit in a minute. Absolutely makes you unique.
We have 1 and a bit occupational therapists, 1.5 occupational therapists.
That sounds better.
Yeah, 1 and a bit. She hasn't actually started, so she's starting next week. We have a part-time psychologist. We have a part-time speech pathologist, 2 certified ESDM therapists, so they are both undergraduate psychology. So we pull from speech pathology, occupational therapy, psychology, and obviously the ESDM.
There could be people listening on the podcast who aren't familiar with what ESDM is, and I just love hearing you talk about it anyway. So give us a bit of ESDM 101.
My ESDM spiel. So the ESDM is the Early Start Denver model. It is an intervention for young children on the autism spectrum. It is an intervention that probably has the strongest evidence base for young children on the autism spectrum. It is geared towards children. Look, it's been researched from 9 months to 5 years, and the curriculum is meant to be a preschool age population of children with autism. It's an amazing intervention. It pulls from the typical developmental expectations of children while targeting the areas that children with autism are challenged. It covers all areas of intervention, of development, I should say. So it covers everything from receptive communication, expressive communication, imitation, play, gross motor, fine motor. But I think the beauty of the ESDM is that it is manualized. It has a manual that comes with it. There is a certification process. In order to become certified, you have to have the appropriate undergraduate degree, speech, OT, psychology, what have you. But the magic in the ESDM is actually the fidelity measure.
Yeah, quite remarkable. Colleagues have gone through the process and I've just been left gobsmacked with the detail and the finesse with which that process is completed?
It is by far the hardest thing I have ever done in my career as a speech pathologist, was to become certified in the ESDM. But what it now gives me is any young child who walks into my clinic with autism, I know exactly what I have to do. And I feel completely confident in what I'm doing with the child, but even better than that is that when any of my staff work with a young child with autism, I know that there is going to be consistency of the intervention that is going to be delivered to that child. And as a practice owner with the number of children who have autism that we do work with these days, to know that you can get that across your whole practice is amazing. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Extraordinary tick in the quality clinical governance box, whopping big tick. And have you got it set up on iPads and apps and help with the recording and so that everybody can see what the little kiddo's working on?
Not at this particular time. It's half and half. We're in the process at the moment with Liz Fulton, who is the certified ESDM trainer for New South Wales, working on an app. One of the tricky things with an app is you can't have an app. You can't have an iPad in a room with a child with autism.
Mm.
So we're actually in the process of developing the app. La Trobe actually has one. They have developed an app.
Yeah.
So speaking at the moment with La Trobe, Liz and I are speaking with La Trobe about their app.
Yeah, because it's so manualized. It's amazing. How does it, just one last clinical question, this is because I'm curious, how does it differ, in your opinion, from ABA?
That's the question I get asked all the time.
Yeah, I thought you might have heard that one before. Lunch.
So if you imagine you're bringing your child into their ESDM session, our clinical rooms are all empty bar the bare furniture. All the toys are kept in the toy area. So we take the child's goals and we select toys to target all of those goals. The toys are put in the room. Some may be within reach. They may be out of reach depending on the child. So then what happens is that once the child enters the room, the child chooses the activity. So any activity that they choose, you then have to target 5 or 6 goals on the activity. So it's child-led from that perspective, although the teaching goals are very strongly embedded in ABA. I think the other part that is different potentially from ABA is that we go from what we call SSRs, which are social sensory routines, and Hannon, I think, knows them as people games. So we have to go from people games on the floor to tabletop, onto the floor to tabletop. And across every single thing that you do for that whole hour, you need to get joint attention with that child every 15 to 20 seconds.
Yeah.
So even when you're packing up, it doesn't matter what you're doing, you're putting shoes on, you're getting a drink of water for the child, it doesn't matter what you're doing, you're still solidly for that 1 hour targeting joint attention and a communication opportunity every 15 to 20 seconds, because we're trying to reproduce what a typically developing child, how frequently they communicate.
Wow, amazing. I've watched ESDM sessions and it's quite beautiful. It's quite light and heartfelt and playful, but there's also a beautiful patience to it, of being able to start where the child is at and extend and wait and extend and wait and watch and wonder and then engage again. It's quite poetic.
And that also comes from the curriculum targets at a very, very early level of development. So receptive communication in the ESDM at level one starts with responding to sound. So when you mentioned that it's targeting, it starts at the child's level, it starts at the very, very early levels of communication. And I, as far as I'm aware, ABA doesn't do that. But once again, the ESDM teaching principles are very solidly ABA.
Yeah, it's an extension. Goodness me. So that makes you unique. My understanding is there's not many businesses like yours that are delivering services to children and families from such a solid ESDM commitment, if you like. So, yeah, absolutely makes your business unique. Tell me about how you find and train up your team.
How do I find the team? We find the team really by advertising. So quite a number of the staff that we have at the moment have been therapists who actually started as students in the practice. And they were working with families and we identified them as obviously having a lot of potential. We have a couple of therapists in the clinic who were already ESDM certified and naturally gravitated towards the practice. And then we have advertised for them. Finding, at the moment, we have interviewed recently, finding staff who can deliver the ESDM just puts that extra challenge on us when we're recruiting staff. Mm. Training in the ESDM is comprehensive, to say the least. It's actually quite hard work. There's an introductory course that they must do online through the Mind Institute, the University of California, Davis. Then there's a 3-day advanced workshop, and then they go to certification, which takes 6 to 9 months. And at the moment, they all train in my clinic, as do a number of other people train in the clinic as they're working towards certification.
Yeah. Gosh.
It's rigorous. It's hard work.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. Would you describe your business as being very process and systems driven?
It has to be. We don't have the option except to be process driven.
What about the admin and finance and billing and customer service side of things? Does that match the amazing detail that you have in place on the clinical side of things?
I wish, Kathy.
Must be well on the way.
It is well on the way. It's a growing business, and I find that it is. We do have systems and processes for everything. However, I find as the practice grows, we're constantly revising them.
Absolutely. That's just quite distressing, isn't it? You just think you've done it and you've got to rework it.
I mean, the ESDM is very systems and process driven, as, you know, many aspects of the speech, but the admin, even down to things like maintaining the toys. Where are the toys? Are the toys in the right boxes? Yeah.
You're one of the few people that I've met that knew about Process Street. Is that something you're still using and enjoying?
No, unfortunately, because... Oops.
That was a dead-end question. Continue.
Dead-end question. I don't know that I found it a bit clunky in the end. Mm. Now, I think probably what I needed to do was that I needed to get in touch with Process Street and have them help me was what I needed to do. So it's still on the back burner, but it has huge potential. I mean, I loved it, but I found that I couldn't quite get it working the way I needed to get it working.
Oh, that's annoying. We've sort of pretty much filled up our quota on Process Street, and we're looking at another product called Way We Do, which is an Aussie product, which is looking really, really interesting. We just haven't quite signed up yet. So, yeah, there you go. You're hearing it now, but that could be an option. But once again, what I'm learning as I'm now managing a growing business, yours is growing as well, is to look at what I'm going to need in like 2 or 3 years' time, not what I need right now. And sometimes in my haste to find a good solution right now, I forget to look further afield with some of those sort of process things, and I end up with stuff in a couple of different places and still not quite the next thing to go to.
And I think that's where we are at the moment, but I would very much like an online system, process system, to support everything, especially when there is more than one practice.
Yeah.
Or you're not there on site, I think that has a huge amount of potential, but just for the moment it hasn't been Process Street.
Yeah. Okay. If I come up with anything, you'll be the first to know. What does your week look like in terms of management and clinical allocation?
Oh, dearie me.
Says us sitting here doing this on a Saturday afternoon.
On a Saturday afternoon. As you know, I started the year out not having a caseload.
That was good.
That was great. That was great for about 3 months, and then that went down the burglar. So I would say at the moment I spend probably 15% of the week on direct case work. I spend an enormous amount of time on staff training, staff supervision. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. It's hours every day, and with the ESDM, maintaining fidelity is an important part of it. Training off-site, so training preschool teachers, takes up a fair amount of time, and the rest is admin. I don't actually know the percentages. I'll have to think about that.
I'll leave that one with you. Over the years, what have been the biggest challenges? Maybe looking back on perhaps the last 10 years.
The biggest challenge is private practice is a business now, and it's a big business, and it's with the NDIS, it's becoming an even bigger business. And I think just understanding and accepting that it's a business now. It wasn't something that you just decided to set up a bit of a private practice here on the side anymore. There's a lot of compliance that we have to fulfill now. And I think that's probably a big part, is that you're running a very big business often now. You've got a lot of things that you need to comply with. I think also the thought about, for me, moving into an evidence-based model of intervention has been a big change. we, years ago, we used to go and do a course. We'd like the course. We'd integrate it into our practice, day-to-day practice. But now it's thinking about where's the evidence base for it.
Yeah, prove it.
Yeah, yeah. Ah, social media.
are we back talking about challenges? Just us.
Yeah. So social media. So the fact that it's a business, the fact that maintaining the evidence base and then social media.
With social media, are you sort of thinking about marketing or is it really the social media that just is a challenge?
I'm not actually 100%. Interesting, it came up at staff meeting during the week, so it's now actually been allocated to another staff member to run it. not for marketing purposes. We have a wait list at the moment. We can't fit any more people in. So if we market and can't deliver the services, then...
That's a different problem, yeah.
It's a different problem altogether. I think understanding what it is that we're trying to do, what am I trying to get for my families out of social media? That's the question. And what is it that we have that's unique, clearly, because we are an ESDM practice and there are very few around, that we have to offer our families? That's the tricky part for me.
I'd like to add another part that makes you unique is your experience, and that there aren't that many speech pathologists with 27 years experience providing services. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's 33 years as a speech pathologist. So, no, in private practice, there are a handful in New South Wales, but not many.
Oh, well, we can have a think about your blog plan and content. Social media is an interesting one. There's some people using it incredibly well, and then there's other people that are having a red-hot go, and then there's other people that should probably step away from the publish button altogether and preserve their mental health and their brand. But it seems to be increasingly an expectation for customers. And I've told the story before that, you know, when I was getting referrals in the business before I sold it, I actually recognized the names of some of the parents. And it took ages to tweak. They had actually connected on my business Facebook page.
Oh, really?
Beforehand. Yeah. 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 And it happened enough times for me to just not think it was a once or a twice off. It really was quite a thing in the last year or so. It's just a way of getting a bit of a vibe for what the organization is like and what they stand for and what they do and if they're worth it, you know, this sort of, it's an interesting one.
The families that are coming through the practice, especially the families where they are early 30s, late 20s, the parents, they go to social media to look at your business first. That's where they'll go to Facebook and they'll search you on Facebook. They don't look for your website. They go straight to Facebook.
Yeah. Well, that could be one to get a little bit of a wriggle on. So you've been in business for a while now. What has your business taught you?
What has my business taught me? That's a good question, Kathy. It has taught me, you want the good things or the bad things?
I'll take anything. Bit of both.
Okay, the good things it has taught me is that even if I'm really not ready to do something, just start, have a go. I don't have to have all my ducks lined up in a row to start something, but just have a go. If you've got an idea and you really think that it really has got a lot to offer people, then just have a go, even if you're not ready. What it's taught me from the bad perspective is that I'm not always as organised as I really would like to think I am.
Are the two related?
Absolutely, completely and utterly. If I was very organised, I would never have a go at something unless I knew I was ready.
So the right amount of impulsivity at the right time.
Is this where I tell you, I think I've also learned I probably have ADHD, I'm sure.
Yeah. Take a ticket. I don't know what medication would have done for me if I'd have kind of taken it more seriously back then. But part of my thinking is that lack of focus at times generates interesting ideas.
Oh, the best ideas come when you are not focused in a total ADHD moment. Absolutely.
Yeah. So some highlights and some lowlights, or some different outcomes that you've sort of learned. Have you learned more about people?
Oh, a huge amount, absolutely. A lot about working with families, understanding families, working with staff. I was only thinking this morning how much time you spend, really, we become psychologists in many ways, and just learning to work with people. And it's interesting, funnily enough, having done the ESDM and looking at joint attention and affect and facial expressions. I always get really good responses when I'm doing my grocery shopping on the weekend because I ESDM the people behind the counters. I smile and I use my facial affect and all those sorts of things. No, you do. You learn a huge amount working with people. Enormous.
Yeah. That was somewhat unexpected. I thought that stuff when I had my big business would be smoother, but there were just constant speed bumps and there were constant warning signs and then there were constant twists and turns. And it was probably the most fascinating part of the business, along with the financial side of it. It was the most fascinating and, yeah, rewarding part as well, I guess, was the team and who I picked and why and how that fit in and who was doing what and who needed what and how they liked to be managed and then how, like, somebody else didn't like to be managed. And, oh my gosh.
That's absolutely fascinating. And you do become really hyper aware of different personalities. And I've never had to analyze people in that way before.
Yeah. So what does your team do brilliantly?
What does my team do brilliantly? They are an unbelievably hardworking team. They get along together in a way that I have never ever seen a team of people get along together. I've never worked anywhere where they have The when you walk in the practice, such a friendly vibe, and that's the staff. What do they do? Well, they do their ESDM very, very well, even when it's hard, even when they have terrible sessions. And they laugh. They laugh a lot, which makes the practice light and fun to be in, even when what you're dealing with the families is not light and it's not fun.
Do you have a performance development program in place where you grow your team, grow your staff?
Yes, we do. So we now have the senior therapist, that's not quite the right word. So below me now, we now have the next most senior speech pathologist, who is taking over a lot of the managerial stuff that I have been doing. We've then got our current group of therapists, and we now have a junior level of therapist. So the two new therapists coming in are the junior therapists. That's relatively recent. It's just starting now.
And what are the advantages for you having that structure in place?
The advantages for me is that I can free up time to do more development. And I have, you know, quite a number of things on the back burner that I would like to be able to do, or I can't do it because it's a lot of the day-to-day management of the team. And our senior speech pathologist is now taking over some of that, and she's very, very good at it.
She's listening. I'm sure she knows anyway.
Imagine if I'd said she's terrible.
Oh, we'd have to edit that out.
We would too. We'd have to edit that part out. It gives me time, just simple things, like it gives me time to go training in the morning before I come to work. It's little things often that allow, but particularly to develop other parts of the practice. That's what I'm after. But it's also nice to see them take over one particular aspect of the practice and run it and do it and do it well and get the rewards themselves, and to see them do that. And sometimes it's been hard to let parts of that go, but letting it go has been brilliant. And to see them do a wonderful job, and they've done things that I would never have thought of. They've taught me just as much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great development opportunity. And dare I suggest, we'll probably be struck off iTunes, but if clinicians, you know, sort of with 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years experience, if they were in the public sector, they would be finding it really hard to find the next level of jobs, let alone those of us with, you know, veteran years under our belts. And to have that managerial and leadership and clinical excellence responsibility, I think is absolutely fabulous for the profession, for the families, for everybody. I just see it as a win-win.
And I'm about to go away for 3.5 weeks. They will run that practice with no difficulty whatsoever.
So what have you done and what have you got in place so that you can just jet off to Tuscany for 3.5 weeks?
3.5 weeks. We have our systems and processes in place. We have our staff meetings that are run now by the senior speech pathologist, the supervision. The supervision has always, yes, I've been involved, but they've always supervised each other at different levels.
Peer mentoring is just such an underutilized tool.
Oh, we use a lot of that. I mean,
it's fantastic.
I'm a staff member, but they all supervise each other. So everything that's in place, we've had a lot of that in place for quite a long time. And the admin has been, some of that will be, you know, I will glance an eye over the figures while I'm away. I will check that. That's about it.
Yeah. Look, it's about having everything lined up. There's no point now, days before you jump on the flight, to be checking a few things. To even make the decision to disappear in the middle of the year for 3.5 weeks really speaks to your planning and your systems and the trust you've got in the team, and that everyone is on the right bus and in the right spot on the bus. So,
and I trust them completely. And if something goes wrong, well, it happens sometimes. I've done things wrong in the past, and they will manage it as best they can. I've got no doubt it will be managed extremely well while I'm gone.
What practice management software do you use?
We use Clinico.
You've used it for a while?
We have used it for quite a while. We had MYOB before that.
Okay.
Clinico is probably, once again, speaking of looking into the future, we're outgrowing Clinico. It's looking clunky on the desktop when you open with the number of therapists that we have there. So, again, we now need to look at something else.
Ouch.
Clinico is easy and Clinico is very intuitive. So,
and it's quite elegant, uncluttered. Yeah. Okay. All righty. And how do you go training up your admin team?
My admin team. So my it involved writing down the systems and processes first of all, and then basically just training on the job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We used to have an exercise book sitting on the front desk, and as new things came up, which they did with amazing regularity, we would just handwrite it in, and then we'd test and measure to see if we actually had kind of nailed the process before we would type it and put it somewhere in a chapter. But we just had it in the exercise book.
And systems and processes really come down to people actually sticking to them.
Yes, absolutely. And not going, not ad-libbing, as I used to describe it, or putting in shortcuts or changing it or getting halfway through the process and stopping and thinking they'll come back to it. And then there's these bits of work half done. Oh, my gosh. So it's very much a habit of starting, working all the way through and completing it.
And I think most of the time when we have ever had a complaint from a family, a system fell down.
You're probably right on that one. And the sticky bits in private practice are often the invoicing and the billing, and that a wrong item number went on, or that the price was not quite right, or that there were two of them and there should have been one, or all of that faffy stuff that, they're really human errors.
And it's amazing how you will make a couple of those mistakes, but you'll always do it with the same family.
Oh, I know. And then they just think you're hopeless at that, and that means you're hopeless at everything. And then you're just apologising, but
you do. And I always think, why couldn't we have made that mistake with at least one of the other things?
And not them two and three times. Oh, gosh. Gosh. How did you develop your sense of business?
How did I develop my sense of business?
Your business smarts.
I think it runs in the family.
Ooh, yes, genetic.
It's genetic. Both of my parents ultimately ran their own businesses. So my father ran a building company and my mother ran a cake decorating company.
Ah.
I'm one of five and three of us run our own businesses.
Yeah.
So that certainly gives me a lot of support in the family. I think a lot of my business acumen I've developed by speaking to my sister and my brother with their businesses, which are much larger than mine. And they're often my go-to people when I need business ideas or to talk business things through. It's often. And, of course, you, Kathy.
Oh, yep. Thank you.
So it's very much been a family mindset.
Yeah, that's I didn't have that experience much at all. Whilst my two siblings are now self-employed, they weren't back then when I was starting up. So the three out of three are all self-employed. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think my hunch is, from the stories I've heard, that when you're in that environment of that businessy environment and that business discussion around the table, that you can have a faster growing business. You can have a business that has more chance of starting on the right foot, staying on the front foot and getting going, and perhaps less hiccups than the trial and error, we'll have a go at it type approach. And I'll get help later when I'm bigger.
No, I've done much of the trial and error, and what I haven't learnt from family discussions, I've learned through making lots and lots and lots of mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. They're always way more useful than the services.
And having to eventually realise that I did have to spend good money on bookkeeping and accounting and advice. So it's a combination. And I think probably some of the best things I've learned were when I did something wrong.
Yeah.
Made a mistake. Yeah. I made loads of them.
Yep. If we're chatting this time next year before your next European jaunt, what are you going to be telling me about the business? What do you reckon's in the crystal ball for you?
There's no crystal ball. Absolutely, the second practice.
Okay.
Yeah. So that will be hopefully, I would imagine, this time next year, and once again, having more of our therapist trained certification in the ESDM, I would like to be able to tell you that I only work in the practice 4 days a week.
You heard it now. 4 days a week.
I would like to take Wednesday off so that I, in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off, and I would be working on new development projects.
Yeah. Hmm. And how are you going with that Eastern Sydney suburb real estate? Where are these rooms just going to appear from? They're just going to have to drop from the heavens, I think.
I think by the time everybody has listened to this podcast, people will be knocking on my door offering me rooms in the eastern suburbs, Kathy.
No doubt. Or knocking on your door wanting to work with you and get that amazing ESDM training as well.
Oh, we get that now, without a doubt. Finding rooms is hard when you work with young children on the autism spectrum because they're noisy
and they're a little bit mucky, and it can be a bit unexpected, some of their behavior.
Oh, and they vomit and they pee and they do all those things. Oh, that's how it rolls.
It's not really always the landlord's dream, but So growth, another facility, another team, doing more, maybe doing different. That all sounds exciting. I'm going to ask you the question of, if you checked in your bank account, maybe Tuesday after the public holiday, and there was this bright, shiny 50K sitting there that was just a gift from the ESDM gods, what would you do with that 50K?
I would put it into, are we talking specifically ESDM, Kathy?
No, you can spend it on anything to do with your business.
What my accountant would say.
Are we asking your accountant?
Absolutely. It's different from what I'm going to say.
It's tax free. It's just a gift.
Great. I would actually invest it in staff training predominantly, because you invest in your staff and you train them, especially in evidence-based programs, then your practice will thrive as a result. Invest in your staff and they will look after your clients.
They are your biggest asset.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They're even more precious than your customers.
They are, without a doubt. Mm. Maybe a staff room, a big staff room.
Yes.
We need that. We don't have that. Many practices don't. That's what I'd love.
Mm. Sounds amazing. Well, I wish for you for that magic 50K to show up. One thing that I offer all of my guests when I remember on the podcast is to ask me a question. Is there anything that you want to ask me?
I think the lovely ladies from Spectrum Speech Pathology stole my question.
Ah.
I think their question was a lot. I've got two, actually. Sorry, Kathy. See, I always take a
plan B, the B question.
The question was, question one, in hindsight, what's the one thing you would tell your 25-year-old self?
Get more help more quickly.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So pretty much by the time I was 30, I had a busy business and two children. Yeah, and a husband who worked shift work. And the only help I had was my cleaning lady. So it's about that. And I sort of, start as you mean to proceed. Get help from the ground up so that decisions have got a context. You're clear about how to engage staff legally. You know what your business and tax structures are. You've got a bit of a loose idea of marketing. I think marketing... Yeah. In our industry changes and is changing, which is good. But, buy advice. It just would have made such a difference to the first 5 years, 10 years, seven years.
I would say seven.
Yeah. Seven is a bit of a turning point. Yep.
My second question. How, as a business owner, what's your best piece of advice to look after yourself and maintain your sanity so that you do not wake up at 2 a.m. worrying about the business?
Night after night. Yeah, I don't know that I always did this really well. I'm toying with the idea of having my adult son and daughter as podcast guests, but I'm not sure I can cope with that exposure just yet. So I might do that. I'll talk to them later in the year about it. I didn't do this well enough. I've always been pretty high energy. I've always been able to make more energy. And I've always been able to sustain my energy for alarmingly long amounts of time. And then I've had a period where I've cooked my brain, and that will be an expression that my family would have heard over the years. And I probably never got enough exercise. I worked way too hard. I think I answered that on a podcast a couple of weeks ago. I tried to be present wherever we call it present now. It wasn't called present back then. I don't know what it was called. But if I was in the kitchen, I tried to be in the kitchen, and I tried to just leave my thinking at the door whenever I could. And some nights I drove the long way home because I just wasn't mentally fit to sleep quick enough. Yep. Yeah. And I've always worked just a couple of minutes from home, so I'd come the long way home. I think having routines, really quite rigid routines at home with young children, meant that I knew that from 7, half past 7, I had the evening to do whatever I wanted or needed to do. So having really strong family routines. We set out to raise two very independent children, and we did. So we had children who could cook and clean and who made their lunches and did their laundry. And this is primary school. So that really helped as well. And that helped. I really enjoyed seeing them develop those skills and was naturally able to teach them. But it also meant that as a family unit, we were very productive. Everybody had bits to do, and that helped as well. It, I guess, alleviated some guilt about me not doing more for them, because I ultimately knew they should be doing it themselves. Yeah.
They should. And it makes for a cooperative.
Yeah.
That's what it should be.
Yeah. So getting more help more quickly, getting good professional help more quickly, always having a house, someone to clean the house, just always, that is just not negotiable. Insourcing and getting the family to kind of really work together, I think, was a big one as well. So they're probably the main ones. Yeah, I still need more exercise. I still need to eat better.
Yeah, but food's wonderful. And wine.
She says, on the eve of jetting off to Tuscany. So, yeah, it's hard. It's tricky because the pace of business is really, really different now. So what I would tell my 25-year-old self is actually different to what I'd tell a 25-year-old about to start up in private practice now, because it's a very, very different environment, because I'm so old.
We're so old. How many years have we got between us, experience?
Oh, I don't know. I've got 30 years of clinical experience.
There we go. Over 60 between the two of us.
Oh, God. I think on that note, we should probably get out of people's ears. Leave them to enjoy their next podcast on their feed. I'm going to give you the last laugh. How about you give a summary of how awesome your business is and shout out the website, and we'll have all of that and a whole lot more in the show notes. But you can have the last say.
So our business is One-on-One Children's Therapy, and the website is www.oneononechildren.com.au, and we are an awesome team at One-on-One Children's Therapy.
Says Sue Barden. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Safe and happy travels. I look forward to hearing how they all go, catching up in weeks to come.
Thank you, Kathy.
See you later. Bye. A big thank you for investing your time right through the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. We hope you really enjoyed the conversation. There's lots more just like it waiting for your listening ears. If you're running a private practice and keen for some more business know-how and confidence, head on over to my website, nakerconsulting.com.au. There you'll find business resources and inspiration. There's blogs, forms, templates. There's information about our conferences, workshops, web events, and more. While you're there, you're warmly invited to book yourself in for a free 30-minute coaching session. Let's find some solutions to your current business challenges. And yes, you are more than welcome to pick my brains. My business has a weird name, but it has a cool story. You can read about that when you're on the website. But let me spell it for you now. nacre.com.au. Thank you for listening to Private Practice Secrets. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, wishing you and your business a brilliant day.